Before we begin, we would like to recognize that this podcast is hosted from the traditional and unceded territory of the Algonquin Anishinaabe. We at CBIE are grateful to have the opportunity to learn, work, and live on this land. Welcome to Audio Alumni, a podcast that features both Canadian and international voices sharing their lived experiences of going abroad. These conversations offer insight into the opportunities, the challenges, and the transformational impact that an international experience can bring. In this season, we are talking about working and traveling overseas. You'll hear personal stories from our guests about what inspired their travels, what obstacles they had to overcome, and ultimately, how their time abroad shaped their lives today. This podcast is brought to you by the Canadian Bureau for International Education, or CBIE, in partnership with International Experience Canada. CBIE is a national nonprofit association dedicated to supporting the Canadian international education sector in its global engagement through advocacy, capacity building, and partnerships. International Experience Canada, or IEC, gives Canadian citizens aged 18 to 35 the opportunity to work and travel abroad. IEC provides youth with a path to a work permit or visa to work and explore one of the 30 countries and territories. Taking part in IEC allows youth to gain valuable international work experience while exploring the world and finding inspiration. My name is Emily Harrington, and I am so excited to be your host this season for Audio Alumni. We're really excited about our conversation today with Leah Prisk. Leah is of Métis heritage and has always had a desire to explore the world. She was encouraged by her teacher to pursue her dream of traveling abroad. And after doing a school project on New Zealand, she became fascinated with the country. Without hesitation, through the IEC program, she booked a one-way flight to New Zealand, much to the surprise of her parents. She embraced every opportunity that came her way and worked as a cleaner in her hostel, an apple picker, and a grape harvester in a vineyard. Despite the challenges that came with living in a different country, Leah cherished every moment of her journey. Let's get right into this story. So I'm excited to chat with you today, Leah. I've read through a little bit about you and am absolutely fascinated by what I know of your story already. So I cannot wait to deep dive into this. So for anyone who has not done some social sleuthing, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes, absolutely. So I am originally from Port Severn, Ontario, and that is near Georgian Bay in the Muskoka area. I'm Métis, and I currently live on the traditional unceded territory of the Algonquin Nation in Ottawa, and I've been here for about 4 years. I've done some traveling and backpacked a few different places, but New Zealand is my biggest travel experience, and I am currently the youth coordinator for the National Association of Friendship Centers, and just really busy planning for a youth forum this upcoming summer, and it's been really great. Looking forward to spring. I just bought a house a year and a half ago, so it's been really nice to enjoy that. I have a diploma in tourism and travel and another one in Indigenous community and social development. And I'm hoping to join another program for Indigenous policy and administration in June. So that's that. Town I come from is very small, but I loved it there. Just a beautiful place to grow up. So I guess I have started a deep dive on my cultural background over the last 5 years or so. And so I've been able to connect a lot with the Métis community and really building community up. So that's been a really nice feeling to just connect and kind of reclaim that lost culture that you know, my family was never really a part of. So that's been a really wonderful experience, and I'm happy to be here.
I want to deep dive into your time abroad and how your experience as a Métis woman and being able to understand, you know, like you said, explore that Indigenous culture that you didn't have an opportunity to before the last 5 years. So can we start to talk a little bit about what first sparked your interest in New Zealand?
When I was about 20, I decided to enroll in a program, the Tourism and Travel Diploma program that I took. And we had done an international development program. And so we had to choose a country to focus on and different types of tourism that were there. And particularly in New Zealand, you know, there was so much ecotourism, green tourism, adventure tourism. And when I was, you know, 17 in high school, I really wanted to go to Australia, but when I was in this program and doing so much research, it was just, it really opened my eyes to, you know, a country that is so progressive in many ways, including, you know, really weaving in the culture of the Maori people that are there, just into everyday society that is there. And I just thought of all of the places that, you know, I could go, I felt like New Zealand was the safest choice. And I had actually listened to a guest speaker who had come in during that program, and she had spoken about, you know, her experiences, her family moving away for a year and, you know, bringing her kids. And they started off in New Zealand because it was safe and comfortable and, you know, they could speak the language and, you know, and then they kind of moved over into Africa and some other countries. So I just remember, in combination with learning about the country, as well as, you know, hearing a story that kind of linked it together, and then also just my desire to go out that way, really sort of pulled it all together. And, you know, fast forward, I had done a co-op out in Canmore in Alberta. And that was pretty wild. It was, you know, 6 months out there. I'd never been out west. And I had met one of my friends who was telling me about, you know, working and traveling abroad. And I just, you know, I had met a few people from New Zealand out there because I live closer to Banff. And lots of people come there for snowboarding and all of these adventure sports that Banff has to offer. And it was just like, there was so many different links that really just brought me there. And then one day while I was working in the concession stand, actually at the golf course, I had access to the computer and I was just looking up, you know, certain things. And it was just like, it became more attractive. And I booked a one-way ticket to New Zealand. So it was pretty wild. And my joke was that if I go to New Zealand now, everywhere else that I go for the rest of my life will at least be closer. And my mom didn't really think that that was very funny, but that's a very long story about, I'd say, how I chose New Zealand, but I'm really glad I did.
No, and that's fantastic. And I mean, that's exactly the kind of understanding we want about, you know, what drove you there. So that kind of leads into my next question a little bit is, how did your family feel about this one-way ticket to the other side of the world? I feel like thinking about my own kids, that would like put me in a mild panic.
Yeah, so my mom, I had called her, you know, pretty soon after, I think it was after I finished my shift that day. And I said, hey, mom, just want to let you know, I booked a one-way ticket to New Zealand. And I think there must have been like a full 20-second pause just of silence. And she was like, no, you're kidding. What do you mean? And she was so, because I'm my mother's only child. So she was like just beside herself. And she was like, well, what do you mean? And I was like, well, mom, the ticket's already booked, so I can't go back now. And this is when it is. And really, there wasn't anything she could do about it. So, I mean, my poor mom, she probably had a few gray hairs come in after that one. But when I called my dad, he was like, uh-huh. That's all he did. And he goes, why would you want to do that? I was like, well, you know, I've always wanted to go abroad and, you know, it's just seemed like a great idea. And here we are. So he didn't really have a whole lot to say about it. But I mean, secretly, I hope he was a little bit, you know, impressed. But they were both very supportive after, you know, after the motions kind of kept coming through. And, you know, I used to call them and they were okay with it. But my mom was certainly more worried than my dad.
I can feel my heart rate rising thinking about getting a phone call like that. So bless your parents for just rolling with the punches.
Yeah.
So can you walk us through a little bit about what that whole process was like of getting ready to make a move like that? You know, working through visas and savings and organization to what you pack to move to the other side of the world.
Yeah, so I was really fortunate because that friend who told me about the working holiday visa, she was sort of there to be like, oh, and this and this and this, and you can go and stay in hostels. And, you know, so she really had just some knowledge that I was able to take away. And when I started doing the application process, you know, I was looking online at what you needed to do. And I thought, and because she had done that working holidays, like, you know what? I think I'd like to work there. You know, I think I'd like to, there's such a big opportunity for doing like agriculture work, you know, harvesting work, just work that, you know, I wouldn't usually do here in Canada. And so because of that, you know, it's like, oh, she said it was always good to have that visa in your back pocket. You can travel, you know, it's the working holiday. So, you know, you go with the intention to travel with the possibility to work. And I thought that that was really, you know, flexible enough for me so that I could still enjoy myself. But if I did need to work, then I would be able to. And so went online, found out that, you know, there was the application process, filled that out. And it was, they did require $4,200 to have in your savings account to qualify for the visa. And so I was like, okay. And I was still, you know, like this was, I was in Alberta for my co-op. So I was still sort of technically in school and still had some student loans going on. So I, and the place where I was working was a golf resort, and I worked a lot of events, a lot of weddings. I, you know, worked in the restaurant, I worked on the golf course. And so that particular summer, I felt like, you know, I was able to save cash. And I remember, you know, every time I would get tips at the end of the day, I would roll them up and put them in a sock in my drawer and just, you know, like, just keep packing away a little money here and there, here and there. And I was able to actually put a pretty good chunk down on my my student debt. And I think I paid it off for the most part before I left, or I still had a little bit after that. But I just wanted to make sure I didn't have that debt sort of following me across the world. And so it was just definitely saving cash. I thankfully lived in the staff accommodations that was right across the street, and the rent to stay in the trailer, the staff trailer, was very inexpensive. And so, you know, not having to worry too much about like the living costs, I think really helped. I certainly acknowledge it was a special situation that, you know, I was able to be able to save for this, as I know many aren't, you know, in that type of, you know, role. So that really helped me to get to where I needed to go. And I just remember taking all of my little rolled up fives, tens and twenties, you know, and putting them in my account. And also too, I had a travel visa, travel rewards visa at the time. And so what I used those travel points for was I actually booked a hotel for the first 3 nights when I got to New Zealand, just so that, you know, I had a place that was my own. So, you know, I didn't have to share sleeping space or anything like that. So that was really great. I was able to use that towards those first 3 nights and just sort of get situated. And then leading up to it, so this was October. I was coming back into Ontario from Alberta. And so I had October, November, December, and then I was flying out in January. So when I got home, I think my mom was just so happy to see me after being gone for 6 months that she was, you know, just ready to be there to support me and get ready. And so we went, and I remember buying the backpacking backpack and, you know, feeling so cool to have that, and, you know, some good shoes. And I had gotten a little first aid kit for Christmas to be able to take over, which was really awesome. And then I bought one of those little sleeping mats and a pop-up tent, a little itty bitty pillow, just everything that I could, you know, make small and bring with me. Yeah. So it was just sort of collecting those items, being home for Christmas. And then it was actually pretty wild because on the day that we were driving to the airport, there was the biggest snowstorm, and it was like, oh my gosh, my poor mom, she's not like, you know, the most confident driver. So she's like white knuckling it down to the Toronto airport. And I'm like, I hope I can go. Like, this is sort of, if I didn't make it, I don't know what I would have done. But so it was a pretty long process. The visa paperwork, I was really, I guess going back to the whole paperwork process, but I was just praying that, you know, it would be accepted. And I feel like it was so long ago, but the process, you know, like adding in all of your information, you know, they check you out. You've got to make sure that they're able to access your bank account. Like, it was really, you know, there was a lot of information that went into it. And I think I just remember when I wasn't working, just like really trying to pull it all together, playing the waiting game and making sure that they were able to see that I had the money in my bank account. And I don't even know if I had the full amount at the time, but I think I was pretty close. And Yeah. So it was just like, it was a really cool summer because, you know, I was away working, meeting new people, and my view was just incredible, you know, with the mountains and this beautiful bowl of like breathtaking scenery that you see in the movies, you know. Ontario is not that
not as exciting.
It's pretty flat. So it was quite the experience. So
bless her heart for taking that phone call with a grain of salt and then still getting you to the airport and all the other things. So once you got there, you said you had a hotel for the first couple of days. And then what was it like really integrating into this whole new culture and finding a job and, you know, getting yourself set up? What was that experience like?
So I had to lay over in China for about 7 hours. So I had met a whole bunch of people that were going to New Zealand. And I had actually met this guy from New Zealand, and he had his own business. He was there. And so I was like, oh, this is, you know, what's going on. He was very friendly. And he ended up driving me and this other girl to our locations. So she was going to stay at a hostel and I was going to my hotel. And he was actually nice enough to drive us out from the airport, which I thought was just, you know, of course you were apprehensive, but that was honestly the first, I guess, step into just the hospitality of every person that I met in New Zealand. So yeah, he drove me out there, no problems, gave me his phone number, told me to call him anytime if I needed anything. And he also let me use his address for, so you need to get set up if you do want to go work with this visa, kind of like how we would have our SIN number here. I had to go and get that set up, and I needed an address to be able to state that I technically lived there, which apparently people do all the time, whether it's a hostel or whether it's a friend that they meet, you're able to actually use that. And it's good enough to, you know, get you through so that you can start working. But when I got there, I remember, oh, I was so tired. I was so jet lagged. It was just the longest flight. It took 42 hours to get there. And it was a really big flight path, I would say. And the restaurant in the hotel was closed. I didn't really know where to go. The first thing I did when I got off the plane, though, was I went and got a phone and a phone plan. So that was the first thing. Just, you know, I needed to have some sort of connection, got set up, extremely cheap over there. It was way less expensive than it is in Canada. So I was pretty happy by that. But yeah, I was just trying to find a place to go and get some groceries in the area. And I remember going to the supermarket, and I was, you know, picking out all of these things, and then I get up to the cash and it was cash only. And I was like, no, where is there an ATM? And they were like, oh, there's one way down the street over there, whichever. And I just was like, oh my gosh. So that was the first, like, you know, and plus being very tired and just trying to figure things out, it was like, okay. So I felt a little hopeless there for a second. And then I walked down and there was a little shop where I was able to get, I remember getting a garlic loaf, sun chips, and a bottle of water, because there wasn't a whole lot there. And so I was just trying to, and I wasn't feeling good either. So I was just trying to kind of survive. And that was the first night, just sort of walking up and down the street where the hotel was on. And then that night, just trying to take a sleep, you know, like I remember laying in the bed and it was quiet, and it was like the first moment that I kind of realized that I was there, you know, like this is where I am. And I think I fell asleep like almost immediately, and I woke up quite early. And the next day I went exploring down the strip there, and it was really cool. I remember trying to, like, I had my camera in my hand, but I was like, if I look around too much, it's going to be, you know, certainly I'm going to look like a tourist, you know, and I really didn't want to. I was like, let's try and blend in as much as possible here. Like, you know, I don't want to, like, you know, because obviously when people think of backpacking, sometimes it can seem a little scary. So I was like, okay, if I don't look like a tourist, I might not get robbed. And I had all of these thoughts going through my mind, you know, and yeah, it was really nice, a really nice day. And so that was like day one of when I got there. And then after the few days were over, I looked up another place where there was a hostel nearby that had really great reviews. And I just set out and kind of began the whole backpacking part of my journey, which took me from Auckland all the way up to Paia, which is in the northern part of the North Island. And that was when I kind of got my first job. So in certain hostels, you're able to actually do some cleaning to subsidize the cost of the room itself. And so I was cleaning the kitchen and the washroom for about a week to subsidize that. And I actually met a few locals up there that were from a little bit closer to Auckland. And they're like, oh yeah, if you ever need a place to stay, you know, you can come stay with us. And actually took them up on that offer. I got a ride back down to the city because there was bed bugs. And so I was like, I don't want to stick around too much anymore. So I got out of there, went and met up with the people that I had met, and they suggested that I, you know, look into maybe getting a car, which I was like, what do you mean? Like, how could that, you know? And so they actually let me use their, what would be like the equivalent of Kijiji, use their account, and they had online car bidding. And so I was like, okay, this is interesting, you know? And so they helped me get a car, actually. It was a 1990 Mazda. And so I was just amazed that it was so old. It had no rust on it whatsoever, I guess, you know, because there's not a lot of snow there.
Yeah, you would never see that in Canada.
Right? So I was like, this car is older than I am, you know? Like, it was really, really cool. And it was blue. It was a hatchback. It had the pop-up lights. It had the fold-in mirrors. Like, I couldn't believe how lucky I felt to get this car. The only thing, it didn't have a radio. So here I am buying a radio at this audio store. Like, yeah, let's put in this really cool-looking radio.
Into your 1990 Mazda.
Because before that, I was, you know, I had the little like a speaker in the console, and that was how I was listening to music through my phone. And I was like, this just isn't gonna do. But wily enough, I got the car for $992. So that was just amazing. It was supposed to be 94, but then I had only had $2, and so she's like, it's fine, you know. And it was a very nice family. The people that I had met, actually, they drove me down to pick up the car. And funny enough, you know, you drive on the left side of the road. The only time I messed up, it was when I pulled out of their driveway. So I feel kind of proud for that. And thankfully, I'm left-handed too, so it felt good. Yeah, it was quite the experience. And then once I got my car, I drove up the eastern side of the North Island and kind of traveled back down into the center. I saw some really amazing views, and just kind of everywhere that I would go, I would drive for as long as I wanted. And then, you know, when I was looking for a place to stay, I would just check online on the maps for you know, hostels in the next town. I would look at the reviews and then obviously the cost and see which one. And then I would just call ahead, show up, and that was going to be where I slept for the night or for however long. I felt like I was pretty independent, you know, throughout most of the trip. I did meet quite a few other backpackers, but when I did end up doing work, it wasn't actually until I made it to the South Island. So throughout all of the North Island, I did the Tongariro Mountain Cross, which was the trail that Frodo had to do in The Lord of the Rings, all the way to Mount Doom. I did that, and it was 20 kilometers, and it was like, I think I got shin splints, like, you know, the first 20 minutes in. So I was like, oh no. The only thing that kept me going was the fact that the bus only picks you up on the other side. So yeah, I actually had to keep walking.
And, wow.
Yeah, it was certainly an accomplishment as well. But then when I finally made it to the South Island, it was the first job I ended up getting was doing apple picking. And it was this place called MA Orchards. And it was the day after St. Patrick's Day. And there were quite a few people who really wanted to celebrate St. Patrick's Day, so to speak. And so, of course, I had to join. And so the first morning apple picking was just, it was so awful. I didn't feel good at all. You know, they're like, here's your bucket, put it on your stomach, your chest, you know, pick the apples, be really gentle. And it was just like, you know, it was a terrible way to start a job, but I you know, kept going. And it was actually really cool because, strangely, you know, you learn a lot about things, you know, on that end of this, of like the food spectrum, like where you would get that food from initially, and, you know, how to, you know, clip the apple stem. Sometimes when you see like a little poke on top of the apple, it's not actually just from birds. It's can actually be from like the clippers, you know, and they clip them off the tree. Yeah. Even, you know, when you see red and yellow or green parts on the apple, the green part is just where a leaf was over top of it, you know, so the sun didn't get to it, like just really neat stuff. Yeah, that was the first job. And then the second one was grape picking a little bit further down south. And that was amazing too. We would sometimes have quotas of 18 tons of grapes needed per day. And I mean, 18 tons is a lot wow. of grapes from sunup to sundown. As soon as the sun started going down over the mountain, it was like, okay, time to pack it in. And I think that was one of the hardest jobs I've ever done, like physically, especially because, you know, it was on a quite an incline, like probably a slope. Like, I can't even tell you, like you're standing sideways trying to pick the grapes. That's how wild it was. So, cool experience, but also just so wild. And, so those were the two biggest jobs that I had while I was in New Zealand. And they were for 6 days on, one day off. So they were pretty long stretches. But I think each one was about 3 weeks in length. And yeah, it was just definitely something that I wouldn't do back home. Or, well, you know, never say never, but that I haven't done. So those were really, really cool to be able to say. And, you know, I met so many people from all over the world that were there. And, you know, it's just funny when you're like, oh, you're from, you know, Argentina, you're from the UK, you're from like Denmark, like all of these people just in the same place. It was a really awesome way to meet people as well as locals.
So first of all, they take their winemaking and their grape picking very seriously by the sounds of it.
Yes, I would say so. Especially that orchard, they were very proud. And I keep looking for seeing the wine in the LCBO, but they said actually Ontario is a very hard market to get into just compared to, you know, other provinces. So
now we've mentioned, I mean, there's so many rabbit holes we can go down with like all the things that you did while you were there. But what I really want to touch on is you mentioned in the beginning that over the last couple of years, you've had an opportunity to really start exploring your culture and your heritage and being able to work in the field on top of that. So how did having that experience in New Zealand kind of play into giving you the confidence to start exploring and to find your voice or to use your voice?
To use it even more, I guess. Yes. Honestly, it was such a reset to go there. The biggest thing takeaway that was just, you know, having the moment to just really learn about who you are. Because all you have is yourself when you're over there, especially when you go by yourself. And, you know, all of these soft skills that I had to develop basically on the fly or, you know, enhance when I was in a situation, you know, where I really had to figure my way out. Then also just seeing how involved the Māori culture is, you know, there's signs, the road signs, the language, it's everywhere, the people, they're beautiful. You know, it was just like, this is so interesting to me. Also being, you know, Indigenous myself, like I really wanted to be a part of it. But that was before I actually started reconnecting. And so I had gotten home in 2015 and I started working at a casino that was on reserve near my house. And so then there was more Indigenous integration there. And that was really cool. And just starting to meet people there and, you know, kind of making those linkages. And then I looked into also, I guess, the Métis Nation of Ontario was able to help me with schooling. I started connecting to them just before, but I wasn't really involved. And my dad, you know, he's like, you know, just check out the Métis Nation again, like see what they, if they have anything to help with career or whichever. And so then I called, you know, looked into any opportunities they had, and then I became a summer youth cultural program facilitator. And so when I was there, I learned so much about the Métis culture. We had weeks of immersive training and just learning how to bead, learning how to make a kapo, learning, you know, the history, learning the dance. and just learning all of these things. And so through the Métis Nation, we ended up going to this conference, and it was called the World Indigenous Peoples Conference on Education. And it was in Toronto, and we, as the youth, were going to be facilitating workshops. It was there that I was like immediately surrounded by a bunch of Maori people again from New Zealand, you know, people from Indigenous people from all over the world. And it was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm here. You know, we were listening to all of these speakers, you know, it was like such an energy. And for, you know, to be in that space, you know, it was like I was allowed to be in that space. I was able to be proud in that space. And I just remember feeling like, I want to be somebody who can come to an event like this. And, you know, I can go up to somebody and say, hi, my name is Leah. I've done this. I can do this for you. Like, how can I help you? And I just wanted to be able to be somebody who has impact, who was able to share their story and just inspire other people, or, you know, just spark something in someone else. And so it was a pretty wild day. I remember it was midway through the event, and I had this like overwhelming energy to just do something. And my friend actually had taken the program that I had taken, but he's like, you know what, like there's this program at Trojan College that I think you'd really like. And he told me a little bit more about it. And then I just had this like really crazy well up of emotions where it was like, you know what, I feel like this is meant to be. Like, this is what, like, I was just floating. And I've had that feeling a few other times in my life, and they've really always sort of turned out to be some of the best decisions of my life. I remember, you know, sitting there, we went for wings, and I was typing, you know, in online, trying to check out the program when it started. And this was in June or July. And I remember applying 2 months before the program started for Indigenous Community and Social Development. It was just like all of these things. And I just had such a positive outlook on it. Every kind of barrier that I went against was, you know, I think this is just a little test, you know, to really test me on, is this something that I want to do? Because, you know, and I got through it all. So then, you know, with this new found sense of cultural connection, and then this opportunity of attending this wild, you know, international event with people that were just so committed to making positive changes for Indigenous people around the world was just something that I knew I wanted to be a part of. And going into the program, building that sense of community and that connectedness, and learning from my teachers and everybody that I was in school with, it just made me feel like this is where I'm meant to be, you know. And traveling and then coming here, it gave me such a different perspective, and also, you know, an open-mindedness. And just, I wanted to be able to go back to, you know, that event that basically changed my life. And through that experience at that event is where I met my now friend, but a friend of mine who worked in government. She was talking about working and traveling abroad, and, you know, how you could be a youth ambassador. And, you know, if you had taken the program, and I was like, oh, I think I did something like that. You know, it had been 2 years later. And so she's like, oh, really? So I was talking to her about that. And I kind of thought she was joking, because she was in the government, you know, and from the town that I come from, government workers are like post office and liquor store workers, you know, like it's not really many people don't work in government from where I come from. And so I was like, no, this can't be true, you know. And she was very persistent, and she's like, you know, no, I think you have a story to share. And then I ended up becoming a youth ambassador for International Experience Canada. I traveled around Canada and told my story to other Indigenous youth. And, you know, and looking back on it now, actually, I don't feel like I ever gave myself any credit for it. But just being able to inspire just one person, you know, in a group of people, that was the thing that I focused on. And, you know, just so many things had happened, you know, and just being able to be given so many amazing opportunities, and that connection really just made me feel so grateful to just have the opportunity to share. And I think that everything that sort of came my way since, you know, I threw myself into the first school program of tourism and travel. You know, that was another one that was 2 months before the start date. And I don't like to say that I like to live on the edge, but it seems like the edge finds me, you know? So yeah, that was that.
First off, just to hear you talk about like the way that the experience had, you know, kind of led you into all these other incredible experiences and this exploration of self and all of these skills that you had to learn and teach yourself on the fly. You sound so at peace when you talk about it, which is absolutely incredible. And there's so much power within that. So yes, I don't think you're giving yourself nearly enough credit for how amazing just even the little pieces of this story that we've been able to dive into are. Yeah, I want to absolutely give you so much credit for and say thank you for being able to share some of your story, because it is inspiring that you take a chance on yourself. You've taken a chance on yourself at every opportunity, and that's not something that a lot of people have the confidence to do. So it's absolutely inspiring, and I'm so grateful that we've had the time to chat and connect like this. Before I let you go, I just want to ask if you have any words of wisdom you'd want to share with someone who's kind of on the fence about taking a chance on themselves, whether it's traveling abroad or starting to dive into their own culture and heritage. And like you said, putting themselves in these rooms that and these events that you walked into that have really inspired, you know, this phase of your life.
I feel like every decision that you make for yourself, even though it's difficult sometimes to, you know, when you have people in your world that may not be on the same page, I would say, you know, hold those desires, hold that thing close to you that you want to do or that you'd like to achieve or the place you'd love to go, because sometimes not everybody is able to give you that encouragement that you just need. And so to be able to just do it, but when you throw yourself into a situation where, you know, if you do something and once you do it, there's really no going back, you know, obviously you wanted to do it. So, you know, it's like that saying, you know, don't think too hard about those big decisions. Just go for it. You know, when it comes to a smaller decision or something that's not so huge, then you can take some time to think about it. But you're never wrong when you choose to do something for yourself, if it's going to bring you one step closer to that happiness that you are hoping to find.
That is amazing advice. So before we wrap this up, the last question I will ask is just anyone who is inspired and wants to learn more about your story or, you know, just ask questions to navigate their own career path and their own, you know, travel journeys, where is the best place to find you?
So I am on LinkedIn, and that is where usually I would reach out to people who, you know, are interested in connecting about that. Certainly email for sure. And I do have Facebook. It's maybe a little more personal, so I would say probably LinkedIn or email.
And that ends this episode of Audio Alumni. We want to thank our listeners for joining us today. We also want to thank our guests for their openness in sharing their stories and our partner, International Experience Canada, for collaborating with us this season. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast for new episodes and visit us at cbie.ca for more content about international education in Canada. Until next time.